You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. The friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Good morning, this is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week during the show, I'm super fortunate to be able to share the stories, the expertise and the knowledge of business leaders, large and small, with you, the listener. And this week is going to be no different. It's actually a really, really exciting show. So on this week's show, we're going to be talking about some of the business foundations for new and growing STEM and biotech businesses here in Oxfordshire. We're a real hub for that sector. So I'm kindly joined by three absolute experts in that space who are going to be sharing their expertise and knowledge with you, the listener. So on today's show, we're joined by Michelle Teng of Edsembly. We're joined by Jane Fryer of Face-to-Face HR and also Sue Copeland of Pretty Marketing and the Oxford STEM Network, which you should definitely get along to if you haven't before. This is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I look forward to welcoming our three experts after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, today we're talking all about STEM and biotech and really giving an insight to you, the listener, of a wonderful market that is huge and growing here in Oxfordshire. So let's start by introducing our three experts. Michelle, for those who don't know you and don't know your business, can you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Ben, for having me on the show. I'm Michelle Teng. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Edsembly. So Edsembly is a tech bio startup that's based in Harwell, Oxfordshire. So we specialize in designing proteins for immunotherapy using AI. And it's leveraged through the long-term cancer survival study. So we're using the blood to look at drivers of cancer survival and turn them into therapeutics for other cancer sufferers.
Amazing, amazing. What a wonderful business. And Jane, for those who don't know you, like Michelle, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Jane Fryett. My business is Face-to-Face HR. We're a small HR consultancy business based in South Oxfordshire. We particularly like working with science and tech businesses to support them with their HR.
Amazing. And last but certainly not least, Sue.
Hello, I'm Sue Copeland from Pretty Marketing. As I'm totally branded on my page, I see. Pretty Marketing helps leaders in STEM and biotech with their clear marketing strategy and launching products into new markets. And our clients are usually brilliant at the technology, but less confident when it comes to the marketing. And that's where we come in.
Amazing. Perfect. Sue, there's going to be three short straws this morning and all three of them are a song choice and you've got the first one. So yeah. You have kindly chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What's your song choice and why have you picked it?
Yeah, this was hard, but I went for Sax by Fleur East. And the reason for that is that my daughter and two of her friends danced to this. It was a surprise dance at my 50th birthday party. And so I have very fond memories of it.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. I hope you enjoyed that song. And hopefully some of you were dancing at home whilst listening to that song just for Sue. But if you are just tuning in, today we're talking all about biotech and STEM and really some of those business foundations to consider for you, the business owner and listening at home. So let's start the roundtable conversation, if that's okay. And Michelle, I'm just really keen to start with you and really talk about the business foundations. How important is it for STEM businesses and biotechs and startups to really have those strong business foundations in place?
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely essential. But you also need to absolutely must have a co-founder if you can, because I feel like, you know, when you come in twos, you can also kind of build on each other's strengths together as in the business. I think I'm very fortunate to have a co-founder that complements my skill sets. And he's kind of a very much a details man, and I'm more of a big picture person. And I think together we kind of see both views when it comes to building a business, which is essential. In terms of strong foundations, absolutely, you must have all your ducks in a row before you kind of click go. Because once you start, there's very often very few moments where you can actually stop and reflect on how far you've come and what are the lessons learned. You know, you kind of need to kind of play the tracks very quickly as you go along without much time to think. So I think having a very clear strategy at the very beginning, but also be agile enough to shift the strategy and adjust it as you go along in response to the market and the environment is absolutely crucial.
No, absolutely. And in terms of that growth, Jane, I think it's a good place to come on to you because, of course, to grow an organization, people are a massive factor there, aren't they? And having the right people. What should businesses I guess, consider when thinking about hiring and thinking about having those strong HR foundations when expanding the team and bringing that right talent to give the foundations to grow?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I suppose it's just building a little bit on what Michelle said. It's knowing what skill sets you need at an early stage to start your business, and that'll be different depending on, you know, the type of business that you're running, but being really clear about what you're looking for. Often in a startup, we want people to kind of roll up their sleeves and do a bit of everything. So there is a certain mindset as well as the skill set that you need. It's not just about the technical skill, it's also about the attitude, I think. And that's really when you're first hiring. Obviously you want to get the basics right in terms of protecting the business, having the right contracts of employment, having the right documents to support that, but also thinking about, you know, how are you sharing your vision and your values with your people. A lot of small businesses that we work with, they haven't really clearly articulated their values. And as you grow, that will become so important because that can become lost. You know, unless you're really intentional about this is our culture, this is our values, this is how we work, you know, people kind of create their own. And that's where you start to end up with like subcultures, which isn't really conducive to you all pushing in the same direction.
No, really, really interesting insight there. And Sue, I'm keen to talk about the people and the network first. We're coming on to marketing at the moment, but I think that growing any business in any sector is really important to have a strong network around you and that strong support network. But I think particularly sometimes within biotech and STEM, there can be so much shared learning, and I'm sure Michelle will have an input on that. Talk about the Oxford STEM network and talk about some of the, I guess, benefits of surrounding yourself with fellow professionals and fellows experts in that space.
Building on what Michelle and Jane have said about surrounding yourself with people who complement your skill set, there are a lot of really good networks out there. Ben, you run one yourself. And there are they fall into different categories. So there's really good general business networks, which suit people at certain times. And there's lots of very specialized networks in the STEM and biotech sector. Oxford STEM Network really came about because there is a lot of support for very early stage business, lots of incubators, accelerators, and so on. There is less out there for when the business is a little bit more established. And leaders are looking for people now who are at a different level, different stage of business growth. And yet they may not have all the resource in-house, or they just want to be around peers who they can get to know well enough to ask questions. How are you dealing with the HR issue? How are you dealing? You getting on with so and so in your business, or how did you tackle this particular issue? So the Oxford STEM Network is really all about bringing together people, not just based in Oxfordshire, who are running STEM and biotech businesses in a peer group. It's very, there's no agenda. It's all about getting to know people, getting to trust them. So you can ask those questions, you know, outside the meeting, build the relationships. And also when you have a need that you know you need to go out and help, ask for help, that you've already encountered people within the STEM network that you think, oh, yeah, I can go and ask them. And one of the other rules that I have is that it's non-exclusive. And what I mean by that is that everyone's welcome if you're already working in these sectors, because we want choice. We don't want to necessarily be told who to go and speak to. And my husband's a scientist. If I told him that's the person to speak to, he'd go off and do his own research to prove me wrong. So it's also about, you know, people buy from people. It's about your own personal chemistry with people and having a choice as to who you could go to for help.
No, absolutely. And just continuing on that note, Michelle, if it's okay, just in terms of your own journey of launching a wonderful organisation, how have you had a support network around you? And what's the values in terms of individuals that are coming outside your business network, but then also potentially looking at boards and advisors? Like, how does that piece together, and what's been the decision making process?
Ben, that's a really good question. I have to say, building a support network for a working mother starts organically. You need to have, you know, the childcare surrounding you to wrap around your lifestyle. And also, you need to be prepared to be ready and when you're called upon to do, you know, certain tasks or, you know, certain urgent matters that you need to see to. So the support network is absolutely essential, the wraparound childcare to allow you to kind of put in the hours as and when it's necessary. And also in terms of finding the right boards and individuals and investors, especially, I think I've been quite fortunate in that it has come through my own past social networks and also ex-colleagues that I've worked with. And they've sort of come together in a way that didn't need much orchestrating. It just fell in place. But absolutely, when you start thinking about building your own business, you must have the right people around you to support you both professionally and domestically as well. And especially for a woman, that's so crucial. For women who have, you know, children who have left the house, it's a lot easier. But, you know, there's no good time to start a business, you know, especially in for women who have, you know, children going through the journey of, you know, they're still relatively young right now. So having to juggle all that alongside with, you know, building the business has been extremely tough.
No, absolutely. What's your take, Sue?
Yes, there was a LinkedIn poll just recently about what's the best time to run a networking event. And I think our attitude to that has changed and is more mother friendly or parent friendly. And there is no perfect time. So the other thing is to be, I think where you were talking earlier, Jane, about values, you know, making sure that as a business, you've defined what your beliefs and values set are and being tolerant of other people's circumstances. And it also gives people permission to say, do you know what? I just can't do networking events at that time, or I just can't, you know, be available to the business at that time because of my other commitments. I think businesses on the whole are much more tolerant about that. And it's difficult when you're an early stage business. You want everyone there the whole time to take that on board.
Jane, I think this brings you really nicely into the conversation, because I think that your own business and how you run your team in terms of that flexibility, but also running an absolute thriving business that offers great service to your clients. How do you balance that in terms of enabling your team to be mothers, to be parents, to have great personal lives, but also be able to really deliver for your clients as you always do?
Yeah, it's a good question. We do run a really flexible team. We all kind of work remotely. We just come in once a week and get together, which is really important to have that face time as well, I think. About balance, isn't it? But I say to a lot of people, you know, it's about managing individuals. We shouldn't have like a one size fits all approach to how we manage our team, and what's right for one person won't necessarily be right for somebody else. That doesn't mean that you're discriminating or you're treating people unfairly, because the fairest way to treat someone is how they want to be treated, right? And you know, so understanding your team, sitting down with them, understanding what motivates them, what what's important to them, how they need to juggle their various responsibilities, whether it's kids, whether it's elderly parents, whether it's pets, whatever it is, you know, people all have draws on their time other than work. And so you've got to manage the whole person, really. I think that's really important. There are lots of tools you can do when you first employ someone to understand a little bit more about them and maybe what doesn't make them feel well at work and what maybe challenges them from a mental health perspective as well. It's so important in this day and age that we kind of understand that.
Absolutely. Jane, I think it's your turn for a short straw. As with Sue earlier, and Sue set a very high bar, you have chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What's your song choice and why have you picked it?
So I've picked this song because, as you know, I recently did a channel relay, which was a swim across the channel with six of us, which was quite an amazing, major kind of milestone in my life, as it were. I feel a little bit different after having done that. And one of the songs that kept us going was Push It, Salt and Pepper. So I'd like to choose that, please.
Discussing topics that impact local businesses and their owners, this is The Business Brunch. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network, the friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Sign up to our mailing list at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to The Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Goodness, our guests have a good song choice this morning, don't they? There's a high bar for Michelle to come on to. I hope you're feeling pressure here, Michelle. But in all seriousness, if you are just tuning in, we're talking about STEM, we're talking about biotech, and really some of those business foundations to consider in order to be able to thrive in that sector. Michelle, I'm keen to come on to you, because I think one of the things that you do really well within your business is balancing the brand of the business and really shouting about the work that you're doing, but also as a founder, you've got your own profile and you've got your own brand. How do you balance promoting yourself as a founder but also marketing the organization? And I'm sure Sue's gonna have some good input here, but it's just, I think Assembly really stand out in that space. I'm just really keen to hear your story there.
Ben, you might be very disappointed with the answer, because I actually never orchestrated any of that. But I do believe that, you know, the motivation and the mission of the company does, you know, speak for itself. And the message that we convey to the external world is sort of reflected in, you know, what we see as important. You know, we built, it's an AI company, sure, but it's an AI company with a very centered focus on building drugs for cancer patients. And I think that resonates to, you know, the general community, because there's such a strong altruistic element to what we're doing, in that we want to give an opportunity to cancer survivors to come forward to contribute to the study.
Absolutely.
Because in our journey, whilst building the company, one thing that really struck me was how these cancer survivors come forward, and they're so willing to share their cancer journey story, how they survived it and how they reflect upon it, and, you know, how they view life moving forward. So there's a very philosophical element other than just the straight up science, if you know what I mean. And that in itself has brought a whole new meaning to the business for me. You know, it's taken to a completely different level. And a great legacy to leave behind.
Very much so. And I think that's a really good thing, actually, because I think that there's the human part, which will always be more important than business. You know, how do we help cancer? You know, how do we make that impact to so many hundreds of thousands and millions of lives? But also, we need to have strong fit business foundations to be enable us to get that. And Sue, how do you, from a marketing point of view, how do you manage that? Because if we look at Michelle's business, we're looking at volunteers to come forward and share their story. There's the investor element. There's the, we're running the business there. There's so many different facets and spheres to marketing. How do you manage all of that?
Yeah, good question. The problem is usually not ideas, it's prioritizing and being clear about why we're doing things. And, you know, the one of the things that I see happening all the time is people jump in and are doing tactics, marketing tactics, without thinking through why they're doing them and what they expect the outcome to be. And Michelle's been really good at articulating that the best marketing is referral and your network and word of mouth. And there's a lot you can do to facilitate that. And also within STEM and biotech, being clear on what you're trying to achieve, who you're trying to influence, your ideal market, actually taking the moment to say, why are we doing this and what do we expect to happen, simplifies your marketing. And it's also about bringing the rest of the team on and saying, look, this is where we're focusing at the moment. And those underlying values dictate where you're going. I joke with people that since the pandemic, that strategy has never been so short term. So I specialize in marketing strategy, but we have to be agile, as Michelle said. The marketplace and our consumers are changing all the time. So the underlying values need to be clear. The reason why we're doing it and what we want to achieve at a certain stage is what dictates the marketing. And I spend more time working with people on what not to do at this point than what we should be doing.
No, really interesting. And if we turn this to people, Jane, because I think one of the things that that's been touched on this show quite a lot is about that aspiration, that value, and that people-centric approach. How do you market your values, your aspirations, your vision of the company to potential employees, and how do you attract them in that way?
Oh, that's a big question, Ben.
Sorry. How to make friends and influence people.
Well, I suppose, first of all, you need to know what they are. And I guess if you're co-founders, you need to be quite joined up about that, because
Absolutely.
There's nothing that communicates this more than your actions. It's not about words on a wall or on a brochure or whatever. It's about how we kind of act day to day. And often if there is confusion, it's because there's confusion at the top, to be honest. So I think being really intentional about that, and really clear, you know, when you've got a business that has such a clear mission, like Michelle's business has a very clear mission,
Absolutely.
People can feel it and people live and breathe that, you know. And whether you're, you know, man in reception or, you know, actually doing the science, you can be motivated by that really strong mission and vision that the founders lay out and that, you know, you can buy into. The other thing that I love about being really clear about values is people opt out. You know, if they feel your values during their hiring process, they decide it's not for them. And, you know, you want people to opt out really at that stage. You don't want to be hiring people that really don't fit. There's an amazing book called Traction, which I always say to people to read, actually, which has a people analyzer in it, because I think this is a really hard thing during the hiring phase to assess, you know, what is someone's kind of value set? Do they fit? Are they the right person? It's easier to tell if they've got the right skill set, but the attitude, like I talked about earlier, is a lot harder to assess. And Traction, the book Traction, sets out a people analyzer, and I do really love that. Because I think it's a tangible thing that you can do on your team. That kind of, that's why when people say they're just not quite right, they mean the values fit isn't right normally.
No, absolutely. This show is about you, but I have to put a sentence in. Being a subject that I like a lot, I think in my experience, I completely agree. I think that the biggest cost of recruitment is getting the wrong person. We all know that. And actually, I think that the single biggest reason that the placements don't work out is because misaligned aspirations, they expected to get to this level and they couldn't, or the organization expected them to do this and they didn't, or values. And I think that if those two things don't match, a hire will never, ever be successful. If those things do match, it normally will be. So I think my biggest advice is never, ever, ever rush recruitment and never settle and be transparent. Anyway, I'm going to get off my soap spot. box and go over to Michelle with something far more interesting, which is really about the resilience piece, because I think that running any organisation, of course, you need resilience. Of course you do. But within within high tech, within biotech, within STEM, I think that there will be hurdles. There will be studies, there will be trials, and the outcome won't be the one that you were looking for, or funding, or grants, or their hurdles. How do you bounce back from that, and how do you navigate knowing that actually you, to get to the wonderful work that you wish to do, there will be hurdles along the way? What's your advice there, Michelle?
I think one of the most important traits for a founder is grit. Sometimes you just need to accept that, you know, it's always going to be there. You know, those hurdles, obstacles, they're kind of part and parcel of a startup journey, but it's a case of how do you actually navigate those? You know, how do you get around those hurdles? And you know, whether it's funding or something else, there's always going to be, you know, a problem that you need to solve. You need to get comfortable with being uncomfortable all the time.
Absolutely.
I remember, you know, a famous founder once said, you know, being a CEO is like chewing glass every single day and swallowing it. It's absolutely true. It's about how do you actually get comfortable with having to solve a problem. There will always be problems. Every single day there will be a new problem. It's how you get comfortable with thinking through these problems and finding potential solutions and then executing them and being comfortable with that treadmill every single day. It's a mindset. And I think I'm fortunate in that I've had, my childhood was very much spent on, you know, sports. So having a sportsman's mentality has really helped me, you know, the traits that you need to foster, like perseverance, you know, determination, and discipline, mental and physical discipline, all that sort of counts into running a startup. And I think I'm fortunate to have that foundation from a young age that I can actually cultivate now and instill in others as well.
Just building on that piece, if you don't mind, Michelle, just in terms of that sport background, do you think there's an argument to say that you absolutely have to have that competitiveness and that desire to be the best? You know, like if I'm going to mention football, I'm sorry, but like if you were to look at like Ronaldo, for example, his absolute obsession with getting to the best is probably what's got him there. Do you think that in terms of the startup phase, do you think that there we need an element of that?
I would like to think so. I think it's really helped me. I also know lots of other founders who like to hire sports people because they have the right foundation to succeed. And I think there's an element of truth in that. Although I'm not saying that if you're not a sportsman, you won't succeed. I think there are lots of non-sportsmen out there who have been phenomenal businessmen and successful entrepreneurs, right? But I think having those ingredients really set you up for a higher chance of success than if you don't. Of course, you can imbibe and, you know, cultivate those later on in life. But that's something that I'm thankful to my parents, you know, having sometimes pushy parents, you know, has, you know, reap some benefits in that. Yes, I felt like, why have I lost so much of my teenage years? I could be socializing in shopping malls, but no, I ended up training three hours a day and then going straight home to do homework every single day for about 8 years. But it's paid off later part in life.
And absolutely,
I think, you know, I'm actually thankful for them to, you know, they didn't push me. They didn't say, keep at it. It will pay off one day.
Absolutely. So the third of the tough questions, Michelle, there's a high bar with Sue and Jane. What's your song choice? Can you match them? And why have you picked it?
Right. So I have picked the song Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears. And it sort of speaks to me as a child. Now you know how old I am, as it does now. I have very fond memories of sitting on the back of my dad's car, singing at the top of my voice. I know the lyrics, you know, every single word in the lyric. And it didn't really quite, you know, I didn't quite understand what it meant until now. You know, when I play in my car, when I drive to work, I realize actually, you know, it mirrors leadership quite a bit because it highlights the emotional cost of leadership, especially in, you know, mission-driven domains like what we're doing. You have to sort of find the midway point between being ideal, you know, idealism, you know, your dreams, and real world constraints. And how do you find that matching point? Where does it both meet? It's probably, you know, the answer I'm still looking for. And I think I will continue to do so for the rest of my journey through leadership. And also it highlights the personal cost to success sometimes. There is sacrifice. And for different leaders, the sacrifices come in different flavors and different things.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Our business breakfasts start from just £15. Find out more at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. I'm following that wonderful song choice chosen by Michelle. And actually, I think if you're anything like me, how thought-provoking, you know, as leaders, we absolutely do need to make sacrifices and keep going. So no, thank you so much for that, Michelle. If you are just tuning in, we're talking all about STEM and biotech. We're talking about the foundations that these sectors need in order to be successful and have the best chance to do that. But also, I think businesses outside that sector will have so much to learn. Jane, I'm keen to talk about outsourcing versus hiring or insourcing, and I'm sure that Sue and Michelle will have views on this, but what are some of the things to consider, whether to go to an external expert or whether to have that resource internally, or whether to be that person that wears many hats and maybe not be the best person for it but continue with it? What's your take on that piece?
I think it's yeah, it's very much depends on your stage of your journey. But certainly in my own business, I outsource things like bookkeeping, etc., quite early on. And I think it's definitely part of the mix. There will be some roles that you absolutely will need to hire because, you know, you can't really outsource sort of really fundamental aspects of your delivery easily. I think is particularly if you're doing what Michelle does, you know, you're going to need employees from day one. But that wrapper of advisors around you and support roles and, you know, specialist skill sets that you don't really need to have somebody either permanently attached to your organization or certainly not full time, definitely outsourcing is a way of bringing in the skill sets that you need as and when you need them at a cost which works, you know, for your business. So but there comes a time we love working with businesses who are growing, and there comes a time where actually it's more cost effective or more fitting for the business to hire HR directly, for example, particularly when they're wanting to do things like more sort of cultural change or, you know, stabilizing certain aspects of like recruitment. It often there can be a time where you think actually we need someone to manage this in-house. This is too much to outsource. But I think there's always a benefit in having flexibility. You know, you can go up, you can pull back when you're outsourcing. A lot harder to do that when you've employed somebody.
What's your take on this, Sue?
Yeah, there are other benefits to outsourcing as well. As Michelle has highlighted, it's lonely running a business at times. It's hard. And having trusted advisors around you or trusted network around you who you can just run ideas by and check in. And the technology with the AI productivity tools that are coming through, you know, we're all using those tools to help us be more efficient in certain aspects, but it still lacks that human, is this the right thing for my market, that you need to check in with. And when you're working with an outside, outsourced agency, they're working with other clients. They've got the finger on the pulse a bit more about what else is going on in the marketplace. And that can be really valuable and something that that can really help a leader, you know. So I think I think there's huge value. I think that, you know, when you get to a certain point, it just doesn't make economic sense to be outsourcing all of what you're doing. But there's still always, I think, a value of, you know, keeping those trusted advisors around in case you need them. Because sometimes there's things you don't want to discuss within your business with your colleagues. And, you know, what I do with marketing strategy, a lot of what I'm doing is leaders know what they want to be doing. They just need to get it out of their head and discuss it with someone and then have somebody, you know, repeat back to them. Yeah, I think you're doing the right thing. So there's more to it than, you know, simply a simple output.
It's really interesting. I think you've both really, really hit the nail on the head there, because I think that if we go back to the point that Michelle was touching on in the previous part of the show, is about that sports mentality, that competitive advantage. Actually, sometimes there is a huge benefit of employing an absolute expert within this area to deliver this outcome. But then actually, as things grow, the point that you were making, Sue, is that sometimes it will make sense to, you know, let's use marketing as a really good example. It will make sense to have a marketing exec in-house to give that ability to take a picture when you need to have a picture, or to have that instant input. But actually having somebody like you with that strategic approach will bring to a new level. It's a really, really interesting, it's a really, really interesting balancing act. What have been your experiences, Michelle, in terms of this? When to outsource, when to get advice, when to wear the many hats of a small business, and when to keep in-house. What has been your take?
I think when we started the business, I have to be honest, we didn't really have a choice. I mean, it was literally me and Jake, and it was in lockdown. I basically had to wear all the hats, you know. But as they say, you know, if you are a startup founder, you have to be willing to roll up your sleeves and do every job that's required of you, and then fire yourself from every single role once you find the right person to take it on. And that's exactly what we did. I'm very fortunate to have, you know, met Jane along the way and Sue, and they've helped us in various ways, which we're, you know, very grateful for. That we simply don't have the bandwidth. Once you have an organization of more than 10 people, it just basically escalates to a point where you need people to take care of certain functions in the business. And this is where outsourcing really does help, especially when you are still, you know, kind of a small, lean outfit. Bringing in HR, for example, and marketing as different separate functions, they actually see from outside in. So they actually have quite a, and they see it for many other organizations as well. So that's actually quite useful. You know, they can actually help give you the best advice based on the company at your stage. And, you know, they see the same challenges over and over again through different organizations. And they also know how to execute the plan, you know, because they've done it many times, you know, rather than having an HR person internally, they're just dealing each problem as it comes along. So sometimes having an outsource version of HR and marketing is actually quite useful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are coming to the absolute final stint of the show. I can't believe how quickly the time's gone. But one of the things that I like to do on the show is just leave a lasting tip with our listeners. This doesn't need to necessarily be something new. It could be something we've discussed already and you would just like the listeners to highlight it in their notepad, or it could be something that I've not asked you. So if we're going to leave our lasting tip, let's start with you, Jane. You can have the final short straw of the show. What would be your lasting tip or thing to remember?
I think it is writing down your values and just being a bit more intentional about how you work and so that you can communicate that to the people around you.
Amazing. Sue, what about yourself?
I'd second that. And I'd also say that the innovation, the technology is only half the battle. Being clear about who you're going to help and who's going to benefit from your innovation is just as important, and you need to work at it.
Amazing. And Michelle?
I'm going to sound a little bit corporate, but I would say strategy, clear strategy and execution, plus the right culture. These are the three key ingredients for any small business that will give you the opportunity, the best chance to flourish in the long term.
Absolutely. What a great tip to end the show. But unfortunately, we have run out of time. So thank you so much to our three experts for joining us today. If you are just joining in, definitely follow these three experts because they do wonderful work within a wonderful sector. So we've had Michelle Teng of Assembly. We've had Jane Fryer of Face-to-Face HR and Sue Copeland of Pretty Marketing and the Oxford STEM Network. Just a reminder, we are going to be back next week with some brand new guests. And we're actually joined by a solo guest next week. We're joined by Greg Box Turnbull of Fortitude Communications. We're going to be talking about Greg's own story of working within one of the biggest newspapers in the UK, building a PR agency, but also his amazing work as MD of Oxford United and their stadium work as well. So it's going to be a really interesting, multifaceted show, I am sure. Finally, just a reminder, you can listen to this show on the radio or online every Sunday at 11 a.m. And do look out for the podcast version, which is available on any major podcast platform and is released on the Monday morning. And if you'd like to see my lovely guests, do look out for the Facebook video version, which is released on the Get Radio Facebook page and their website every Tuesday. But for now, whatever you're doing within your business or whatever you're doing within Oxfordshire, enjoy, and we'll see you next week.